Welcome to EXO, Your Unlicensed Therapist, the podcast where we deep dive into the chaos of being a human. I'm Kate, your unlicensed therapist. Emphasis on the unlicensed part. I'm just a girl, not a real therapist. This is the place where we talk breakdowns, breakthroughs, and pretty much everything in between. Now, if you've ever cried in the basement of a dingy dive bar, trauma dumped on ChatGPT, or spiraled over your bank statement, congrats. You're exactly where you belong.
I was just having this conversation with my publicist because she's super into astrology.
Love.
And she was saying that like it makes sense in a lot of people's charts that like they need to be near the water. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, what about my, like what in my chart makes it that I'm like, I hate the water. Like I don't even like to shower. Like I don't want to be wet at all. Like I don't want to be wet ever.
You hate washing your face. You're just like me.
I don't like being.
I think we both have sensory issues.
Uncontrolled wet. I don't like it.
Yeah. If it's like I know I'm gonna be wet, fine.
No.
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 No pool.
No. No.
God.
No.
She said no.
No. And we were at this like thing that had this like beautiful porch like right on the water, and they like I went out there to take pictures. And they were like, isn't it so beautiful or whatever? And I was like, no, like I wouldn't have even gone out there had my room had like a private beach and I didn't even step outside because I was like, I'm going to track sand. And if it gets in the bed, I'm going to really have like a mental breakdown and I can't handle that.
I forget that we both have like severe sensory issues and then yours are way worse. I always think mine are really bad. And then we hang out and I'm like, oh, no, yours are way worse than mine.
And Katie sent me sensory brushes. That's how horrible my sensory issues are.
To calm you down?
Yes. They're supposed to like soothe you.
I think someone needs to take your brain out of your head and study it while you're still living. Because
me
I think
too.
We need to understand.
I'd love to know.
I'd love
to know what's going on.
Well, Grace Cashman, welcome to EXO, Your Unlicensed Therapist.
Thanks. Hey.
Everyone, this is my best friend that you're hearing right now. Which is so much fun. Most of the guests that come on here, like, we're friends. Like, we're really good friends. But this is my best friend.
Hell yeah, queen.
And we, over the pandemic, talked a lot about doing a podcast because the conversations we have are just insane.com.
And then, we think we're hysterical.
Well, we do think we're hysterical because we are. But then Grace was like, no, I actually think that nobody should hear what we talk about on a regular basis because I think we would be
private.
Yeah, those are private. Those are giving, like, people are going to call the police on us,
the
probably,
authorities
probably,
yeah,
or like Amazon Prime a straitjacket to our front drawers probably.
Yeah
probably. But I feel like we should start with just like an intro to, first of all, us, like our friendship, because we're going to talk a lot about our
all
friendship today, all the things, but we're going to talk a little bit about this aspect when we get to college.
Yeah,
we met in college. We went to Northwestern University. We both majored in theater and music theater. We both did the sorority thing. We did a lot of the same things.
Yeah, which is interesting because I do feel like we did a lot of the same things but had like very different college experiences at the same time.
Both equally like incredible, just so different.
Yeah, but we were like the same major.
We took the same, we did a
same minor. We
lived right next door to each other.
Yeah, we both went through recruitment but did different sororities, like stuff like that where it was like we were kind of like having parallel experiences, but
they were so different.
They were not, we weren't like doing it together, which I think was good for our friendship.
No, I think so too. I plan to touch on this. Hopefully I remember in college, we had like a friendship hiatus for like 9 months.
Yeah, we did.
After.
The poor universe was like,
these dummies.
Here we go again. We'll try again.
They were like, wait, what did you say? You were like, the universe said
it's
they
so
fucked it up.
Of us. They fucked it up. We'll try for a third time because we had like mutual connections.
We did.
We didn't like meet blindly in college.
Mm-mm. We shout out Kyle MacArthur. Love you. He and I did high school theater together and he did stage door with you, right?
Curtain call.
There's so many Connecticut.
Yeah.
Theater programs. It's very confusing. They did a curtain call together and Kyle had told me that, oh, one of my really good friends is going to Northwestern. And I was like, oh my God. And we met each other literally on the first night. We lived down the hall from each other, which is crazy. And then we were in the same peer advisory group, which is like what Northwestern does.
Thank God.
Otherwise, that would have gone really bad. We're going to get to that. But that's how we met. And we've been inseparable pretty much ever since, except for that 9 month hiatus where the universe was like, you're stupid.com. Try again.
I said, ugh, all right, we'll give them the same class schedule.
Literally exactly the same.
Hopefully they won't fuck it up this time.
And we didn't. and loving each other ever since. Yeah. Grace also lived in Chicago for a period of time, which was really terrible and traumatic for me. I'm going to send you my therapist bill. And she just moved back to the city, which is where you are from, really. I mean, Connecticut, but you're here all the time.
Yeah.
So speaking of Connecticut and speaking of you growing up here, let's talk about your upbringing.
Okay.
Let's get into it.
Sure.
So tell me about, like, what is your earliest memory? Do you, like, have an earliest memory? Because I was thinking about this about myself, and I actually couldn't tell you.
I feel like I have. It's difficult now, I feel like, to figure out what is a memory and what is, like, kind of a fabricated memory from, mm-hmm. like, stories that you've
or, like, a picture
heard about yourself. Yeah. Like, I was 5 when Teddy was born, and I don't really remember
his birth.
That.
Do you remember, like, holding him at all?
Not really.
No memory.
I mean, I remember when he was, like, a baby. Like, but, like, as a concept, like, I don't have any, like,
right,
core,
like,
memories
dark
of, like,
memories of him.
Me holding him or anything. But I was 5, so, you know, I probably wasn't, like, allowed to hold him, to be honest.
Probably not. Your mother probably would have been afraid that you were going to, like, kill him or something.
Yeah. Well, I'm, like, all you have to do at that age is drop him.
That's true.
And, like, what? Teddy was a 10-pound baby. I was probably 10 pounds at 5 years old. So, like, I don't know how that would have gone. I'm sure she was like, she's just going to, he's like a dead weight to this child.
Weighs 10 pounds.
I wouldn't have, like,
five.
Thrown him, but I don't know that I would have attempted to.
Probably not. Now that you think of it, I do. Yeah, you were a small child.
I
looking
was
at
tiny.
The pictures of you, you were really small.
I was so small. Christina and I are the same height now, but if you look at, like, childhood pictures of us, she, like, towered over me.
I actually am envisioning a
and she's like
image,
5'1". Yeah. Like, it's not like
she's small.
She, yeah, like it's and we're about the same size now. But when I don't know, I went through a growth spurt and then became, like, you know, still small, but an average sized person. They were, like, trying to give me growth hormones when I was little because they were worried I wasn't going to be. They did, like, the x-ray to see how tall I was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And they were predicting, like, 4'9 or something. And my mom was like,
how tall are you now? You're like 5'2, 5'3?
Like 5'1.
Yeah,
on
five
a good
one.
Day.
On a good
my
day.
License says 5'1, but.
But
I've given myself, like, half an inch there, but.
Well, you're on heels most of the time anyway.
Yeah. So, like, why shouldn't I be?
Why shouldn't you be?
A Polly Pocket princess.
You are a Polly Pocket princess. If you are watching, she has the most adorable outfit you've ever seen in the whole world. And her t-shirt says prone to tantrums.
I am prone to tantrums. That's a fun fact about me.
I actually don't even know if that's a fun fact. I think that's just a fact. Like a well-known
so
fact.
True.
I think you meet Grace and you're like.
She's totally prone
she's
to tantrums.
Totally prone to tantrums.
Yeah.
So growing up, obviously, like, we have no memories of 5-year-old Gracie because apparently
I was like blocking
shit
it
out.
I don't know. Like, I
mean, maybe you did have a bit of a. Well, your first couple years before your parents got divorced, I feel like you've always said we're, like, good, happy.
Yeah, parents. Like, of course. Yeah. They like I'm just trying to think of something that would have been, like, my earliest memory. I broke my nose, actually. I do remember that.
You broke your nose?
Yeah.
I don't think I know this.
Well, actually, okay. Unclear. I was, we'll have to call in Mary and find out how old I was. I don't think Teddy was born yet. Teddy was not born yet. So pre-Teddy, so this is, like, you know, 3 or 4.
3, 5.
I was getting ready for bed and I was dancing.
As you do.
And I fell
mm-hmm.
and my face hit, like, where the door and the wall connect to each other, like the hinge.
Oh.
And there was a loud crack and then a lot of blood. And so my mom was like, oh, we're going to the emergency room.
Well, yeah.
Which we did. And I remember at some point I wasn't, like, in pain anymore on the way to the hospital. So I just was, like, kind of annoyed that we were doing this.
Mm-hmm.
And I was singing God Bless America.
That's the song you were singing on the way to the hospital?
In the back of the car. And my mom was, like, driving. And I was obviously in the back. And I do have a memory of her, like, turning around with, like, an ice pack that she had wrapped, like, rags around. And she was, like, trying to hold it up to my nose while she's driving and while I'm being like, God bless America. And she was like, literally, why must you do that right now? But that was my song of the moment. I was feeling it.
That's actually a really good first memory.
Yeah, I just, I was like, ugh, She's ruining like my acoustics by shoving this rag in my face. She's not getting it.
And is it was it broken when you got to the hospital?
So apparently when you are born, your nose is made of cartilage.
Yeah.
And at some point it becomes bone. And so it had not, they did a bunch of x-rays and they said it, you know, obviously was badly injured, but my nose had not become bone yet. So they didn't have to like reset it or anything.
Was that like the bump you were like obsessed with in college? Like, was it from that?
I don't know. I mean, I never asked when I had my nose done. I know, like, he asked if my nose had had any trauma. And I was like, I mean, you know, like a million years ago. And he was like, maybe, maybe not. And then I never asked once he got in there to be like, what's, was this? I honestly doubt it because my nose looks just like my dad's nose. So that was probably just a like.
But you did have a bump, I remember. There was like a teeny tiny little bump.
Yeah. But I think my dad has that too. So that might have just been.
To be honest, I haven't like taken a close look at your
genetics.
Nose. I don't think ever. I don't think I've ever like really stared at Brian Cashman's nose that intensely. Maybe now I will.
Yeah.
Next time I see you, if Brian, if any memories, I will just be staring at your nose. And I hope this is why.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, maybe there was some level of like, but I don't know. That's not why I got a nose job. I just never liked it. So, and I didn't just have the bump removed. Like,
No. We had far more things done.
No.
But Grace now has like the most perfect nose you've ever seen in your whole life.
Thank you. Thanks, Dr. Risk.
Thank you. Loving you. So speaking of your dad, so Gracie's dad works for the Yankees and has done that. The first time that they won the World Series was your birth year. Wasn't it on your birthday?
No. And it wasn't the first time the Yankees won the World Series.
First time as the GM they won.
My dad became GM the same year that I was born.
Oh, so I just told a bullshit lie. Into public.
But yes, they did win the World Series that year. And it was my dad's first World Series as GM and the first win as GM. And I was born in October. So I was born like in the playoffs of that World Series. So I'm sure he loved that. I'm sure that was perfect.
Well, you're the good luck
charm. Newborn. I know, but like in hindsight, yeah, totally. But in hindsight, I can't imagine being like what? How old was he? 31?
Oh my God. We were talking about this at dinner the other night.
Like he was so young. And all of a sudden, he has a newborn, his first. I'm the oldest. He has become a father in October of his very first year as GM. And all of a sudden, he's like, he's obviously to go with the team. Like,
yeah, he can't stay.
I know. My mom was like, I was alone with the newborn, like, most of the time. Because all, like, you know.
He was traveling all over the place with the team.
He didn't get, like, paternity leave. I mean, maybe he did, like, legally. But he certainly couldn't take it.
Well, no, when you're in the beginning of a job like that, you can't just, like.
And this was 30 years ago. I mean, maybe now you would have a little more leeway. But, you
definitely
know,
not then.
There wasn't, like, that conversation happening around.
I couldn't anything imagine. At the time. Being our age and being at the position and the assistant to the GM, which is what he was at our age.
I think so, yeah.
I can't imagine the amount of, like, I don't think we have anybody our age at that level of their career at our age right now.
No, it's really crazy. And obviously things have changed a lot because I've talked to him a little about it and he's like, well, I wasn't making like what they make now. Like it wasn't like the same way that it is today. Because he always talks about like, you know, I want to make sure I'm right on this story, but I do remember they had my dad and his roommates, my mom says, had a liter, a soda bottle liter. And she was like, what is this? Because it was just always sitting out. And he was like, oh, we use that to kill the roaches. And she was like, ew, like what? But it was like they weren't making what, you know.
People now maybe would make.
No, yeah. I mean, you know, the industry has changed so much since he started, which is also kind of crazy. Because people always ask him, like, what'd you do? What did you major in? Like, whatever. And he's like, the avenue in which I became GM is not really an avenue that anyone could take now, which was just starting as an unpaid intern in night security and being around enough that you get more and, like, you know, higher and higher up in the.
So crazy.
But that's not really how it works anymore. But.
Well, no, there's more like infrastructure, I think, now.
Yeah.
There's like more hoops to jump through and more like standardized processes.
Well, I don't know if baseball ops had interns when he was doing it. I mean, they do now, but I don't know if. I have no idea. Like, I honestly.
The infrastructure at that point. Like 30 years ago, like most organizations, I feel like didn't have that kind of infrastructure quite yet.
Yeah. And it's all so streamlined now, you know, like the teams talk to each other and.
Right.
like discuss their processes, and they talk to other teams like outside of the MLB and see what their processes are, you know, like
totally.
And I'm, you know, I'm sure they were talking then, but now it's so easy. You hop on a Zoom call, like you don't have to.
It's true.
Fly to San Francisco.
Thank you to the pandemic for that, unfortunately. Speaking of all of baseball, like baseball was clearly like a big, has been a big part of your life, like your whole life.
Absolutely.
From your father and then to your brother now. Teddy, Gracie's younger brother, plays Division One mm-hmm. baseball. And sure he's does. Very, very good at it. So baseball's just been a through line in your life for a really long time. And now, obviously, you have a show on the Yes Network that surrounds what you grew up with. Where sport was, this is going to be a question you're really, Kate, why are you asking me this? But I feel like it's funny.
All right, let's go. I'm ready. Hit me.
Were sports ever interesting to you?
Yes.
Really?
But not in a way that I wanted to play them.
Are you going to, Grace? Interesting because of the boys who played them?
No, like I was interested in them. I used to horseback ride and I was quite good.
You seem like that. You seem and like I, a horse yeah, girl.
Totally.
Totally.
100%. I was a horse girl and I was very passionate about that.
Of course you were.
But I played 1 year of softball.
How old were you?
That was horrible. I was in fifth grade. It was actually really fun. Like, I enjoyed my softball experience. I was horrible at softball. Mm. So that was no good. I was a catcher, all, you know, 30 pounds of me.
Oh my God.
What a
terrible place to put you.
100, yeah, just horrible. I mean, I'm sure I was, like, demanding to be put there as well. Like, there's no way that...
They did that on their own volition.
No, they did. There's no way.
You threw a tantrum. Probably.
100%. Definitely
but
did.
But never baseball.
No. So I definitely had like an interest in sports. I liked going to the games with my dad mm-hmm. and I like going with Teddy. Like I had an interest in them, but it wasn't an interest. Like I didn't like playing mm-hmm. them. Any of them.
Not your thing.
Yeah. I don't know. It's interesting because I talk to Teddy about it sometimes that I think that like I'm a fairly athletic person, but I just don't like playing. You know what my party trick is? Kate, I don't even think you've ever seen my party trick.
Oh my God.
I have freaky climbing abilities.
Honestly, I've never seen it, but for whatever reason, that feels like something.
I can climb fucking anything. I can climb. If you put a rope here, I'd be at the ceiling. Like it is. And I don't have like, you know, crazy upper body strength or anything. I think we can all tell from like looking at me.
maybe not.
But I do have freaky climbing ability. We got locked out when we went to Greece. We got locked out of our villa and I really had to pee and I scaled the fence and broke it.
Were you wearing like a full length dress?
I was in a bathing suit and a sarong.
I hope someone recorded that. Probably not.
I wish I had it because then I'd have evidence of my climbing ability.
That makes like so much, weirdly, that's not a weird thing to me. Like that actually weirdly makes a lot of sense. And I don't know why. I think just maybe from knowing you, that seems like a weird skill you would have.
Yeah. No,
you're kind of like spindly as a human. Good.
Yeah, no, I can get like, my little fingers in any crevice and I'll climb.
Yeah, like you're like,
my way to the
you
top.
You have like, you're not necessarily like flexible, but you have like, I don't know. I feel like I've seen you like do odd
it's
things.
It's sheer drive.
Your body.
Like, it's sheer drive. Like you're like, get yourself up there. I'm like, I'll find a way.
It's like fight or flight. Maybe it's like a sense. I don't know. I don't know what it is actually.
Yeah. So that's my.
That is crazy.
Yeah.
So not necessarily sporty.com, but so even though your dad obviously like has one of the biggest jobs in sports, like you were surrounded by it. It was a big part of your life.
Yeah. Not really a team player. I'm a solo sport girl. That's a crazy
that's why thing she's an actress, everyone.
Yes. No, I mean, I am a team player in like life, but I did not enjoy playing on a team.
You don't like a competitive sport. Maybe that's not for you.
No, I mean, even now, like on Teddy's teams, like I prefer like in the real world, there is a mix of like team accountability and personal accountability. And I'm sure like in the professional sports world, that's true as well. But at least in like lower level sports, it's kind of just team accountability. Like it's just a like if a person on the team doesn't show up to practice, they're all in trouble. Like,
yeah.
And that never made sense to me. Like that. I don't
You don't subscribe to that.
No. And so I think that that was always hard for me. Like, even in gym class, I was like, what? Like,
yeah, like, why do we all have to run suicides because they showed up late?
Yeah. No, exactly. Like, I was like, this is, and you're just, so that whole, like, culture is not for me.
No, I totally get it. Let's talk a little bit. We're not going to spend too much time on this, but your parents got a divorce.
They did.
When you were 11? 10, 11, 12?
Around there, 12, you're like 13, a tween. 12. Yeah, tween. Somewhere between 10 and 14.
But psychologically, those are really formative years for a kid's brain.
Mm-hmm. We know from our psych minor.
And because a lot of this podcast is about mental health and like things you think you can look back on and you feel like have helped you in some ways and maybe traumatized you in others, mm-hmm. and caused you to adapt. Do you think that there's anything from that period of time that taught you something that you apply in life now that you can draw a line back to?
We go to Disney quite a bit.
This is where your hyperfixation from Disney comes from.
Probably some kind of trauma response going on there. Me and Disney are trauma bonded.
Yep.
But in all seriousness, like, yes, that, which is like funny, haha. But also, I do think that identifying something small, obviously going to Disney World is not small, but watching a Disney movie is accessible. And like identifying something that can take your mind off whatever's happening and then carving out time to do that. I feel like I can trace that line back to like, we've identified that Disney is a good escape
for you,
for me,
a good practice of self-care.
Yeah. And then when something's feeling really overwhelming or whatever, like that makes it is like a nice little, it's like a weighted blanket to put on Beauty and the Beast or Lilo and Stitch. And, you know, be like, I don't like, first of all, we know everything's turning out hunky dory. Nothing's. Yeah. And also, I've seen this movie a million times. I know what happens.
Yeah.
And you can just kind of chill and like enjoy. So
probably like it was your earliest form of self-care training, probably.
Yeah.
Learning to like, I feel like from knowing you, and I would love to hear what you think about this, like you have a really good ability to set boundaries and to...
Do you think? I feel like I'm horrible
no,
at
you're
it.
Very good at it. I think you're really good at setting boundaries for your when it's really seriously affecting you. Like, I think you're really good at it. And also, I think you're good at prioritizing yourself and your mental state over certain things. Like, even in college, like, you were really good at it.
Thank you.
And I wonder if it's from that time. Like, I think you had to. You were so young. Like,
yeah.
And we've talked about it for a long time. Like, obviously, your father, it was a very public divorce in New York culture. And I'm sure there was like a lot of stuff for you that was just like overwhelming, and being able to prioritize your mental sanity, even something as maybe, you know, societally called silly as going to Disney World or watching a Disney movie or whatever it is. It could be a million other things. For some people, it's sports. For some people, it's working out. For some people, it's knitting. Like, whatever it is, like, you were able, being able to identify that super young, I feel like might have ended up being beneficial for you later in life when like stressful things came your way.
Totally.
But you've always been good at that.
Thanks.
Grace has always been just so good at telling people to fuck off. Like,
do you think? Because I feel like I really struggle with telling people no, but not telling people to fuck off. Okay. That is easy for me. But telling people no, is really hard for me.
You are not great at letting people down.
Yeah.
You don't like to do that. But if it's like you have a line, like you've drawn a line of like if it's overarching on something that you know you need.
Yeah.
You're really good at being like, and honestly, very kindly being like, you know, like, no, I'm not doing that.
I try to set clear expectations with people like from the jump so that if something is crossing the line, it's kind of clear. And so that then it's easier for me to call out, because I'm like, we all know this is crossing the line. Like, you know that you're crossing the line because I set the line earlier.
Yeah.
I think it's difficult to like invent the line on the spot.
Totally.
And decide later that that's a line, because then people, and obviously people get offended when you set boundaries, like no matter what. But I think it's very easy when you from the jump say like, these are my expectations. Mm-hmm. or this is what I can contribute or when I can contribute or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And then when someone asks for more than that, it's much easier to say, oh, no, because I was clear last week about
this,
you know.
I think,
like, I don't have a heart out today, but if I did, like, I would have said,
I have a heart out at this time.
You know, yeah. I got to be done by 5. And then it would be, and then if at 5:50 you were like, just a couple more questions, I'd be like, oh no.
I have to go.
And I wouldn't feel bad about that because I'd be like, you totally understood, like, the time I had today. But
I feel like a lot of people struggle with that. Like,
that's my best advice, is to set expectations early, like set boundaries before they're needed, because it's more difficult to place them later. And I think people get more, it, you setting a boundary is kind to other people because it allows them to plan accordingly. Like, again, if I had a heart out today, it would be a, like, that would have allowed you to plan
how
exactly, like, everything. The and questions that were important to you, whatever, versus like if I didn't say that and then I randomly was like, oh, I like, I, sorry, I always knew I had to go at 5, then it's like, well, yeah, of course, that, like, now everything's kind of a problem because you didn't get to what you wanted to, you didn't know, like,
yeah,
versus if you're just very clear from the get, from the jump, then it gives people the opportunity to, you know, handle their own life.
Totally.
And Eli, you know, my favorite influencer, made,
who is Eli?
Eli, what is her last name?
Oh, Rallo.
Yes, Eli Rallo.
Oh my God, I was like, who the hell is
Eli? No, we don't know Eli, but
we don't know
but
her.
I know Eli.
I've met her, actually.
Shut up.
Yeah, she's good friends with my friend Kara.
Wait, I love her content.
She makes great stuff.
But she said something recently that was like, it is an adult, nobody's mad at you.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't be in trouble with other adults, which was a huge thing for me to hear. And if an adult is mad at you, another adult is mad at you, it is their responsibility as an adult to communicate that to you. It is not your responsibility to try to guess that maybe they're mad at you and then, like, do something to correct it. Like, if they are mad at you, it is their responsibility as an adult to tell you. It's not your responsibility to figure it out or, like, totally freak out about it.
No, yeah, that's great advice.
100%.
Well, I think we all come from...
altered my brain chemistry. Thank you, Eli.
Thank you, Eli. That also just altered mine, so... thank you to you and then to her.
Yeah.
But I think, like, it's probably comes, like, of school. Like, we're so used to adults being mad at us. And I think we always kind of feel like we're children forever.
Catholic school was wild.
Oh, my God. I plan on doing an episode about Catholic school because it's just, like...
I'd like to be on
maybe
it.
Maybe you'll come back and talk about it because it is cuckoobananas.com.
Oh, my gosh.
How I've do you think...
I've talked to Christina about it quite a bit, actually.
Christina, we have an open slot. We can add another microphone right there for her. She would have some crazy things to say about that in the best way.
It was just, like, I mean... and everyone I went to Sacred Heart with,
there would say something similar.
Yeah, there was just such a focus. And I went there from pre-K through, it gave me an anxiety disorder 100%. I went there from pre-K through
ninth grade.
And when you're there that young, it's like all of the rules are kind of, like, ingrained in you already. So when new kids would come in and they would get in trouble, I would be like, I don't understand why they can't just, like, follow the rules. Like, what is so difficult about this? And then it became clear later on that it's like, because that's not a rule that anyone would think is a rule. Like,
no, it's not common sense.
They used to line us up in fourth grade and check to make sure our socks were purely white.
My school didn't even do that.
Like what kind of crazy, who cares?
They do, apparently. God cares.
And to this day, I talked to Christina about it. If we have something important, like if I was going to a job interview or an audition, I wear white socks because I'm.
Do you actually?
Yeah.
Out of, like, that's like a trauma response. That's like Pavlov's
just
dog.
Just it feels like wearing not white socks feels casual to me. Like, it feels like a... we called it civvies if you got to wear civvies, which also is crazy. That's like a military term. But if you had, like, a free dress day, it was called civvies.
You went to military school.
Yeah. And so it feels like civvies to me, like to wear like colorful socks or something. It's like I wear them working out and stuff. But
of course,
anything you,
like,
important,
Grace,
I wear
has like
socks.
Some of the most, like, inventive sock collection. She has, like,
oh, they're all Disney.
There's Disney and there's Harry Potter, which is another subset of her lore.
So true. I didn't get into Harry Potter till the pandemic, though.
What?
I know. I was an adult. I was texting Christina and I was like, have you ever read these books? They're good. And she was like, so you're like behind on this. Do you think you invented, like that you discovered this great?
You think you discovered
this? She was like,
trend?
I mean, I read them in like third grade.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. No, I read them
honestly,
as an adult.
Bonkers. That's crazy. And actually very Hufflepuff of you. They're kind of like, Hufflepuffs are a little like spaced out like
people
that.
People are like on to something with these books. They're good. And she was like, Christina, no, yeah, like everyone else knows that.
Christina and I are like cut from the same cloth in a lot of ways because we're both Slytherins, like so obviously.
Yeah.
And she is a Slytherin.
Do you think?
Yes.
She might be a Ravenclaw.
No. I think Alana is a Ravenclaw.
No, Alana is a Hufflepuff.
I disagree. I mean, I actually probably would take, I would agree with your take probably more. You know them better than me.
Alana could be.
We'll have them, we'll text them and have them take the quiz. Actually.
Yeah, we'll discuss.
Kind of going back to your parents a little bit, how do you think, you know, you are very close to both of them.
Yes.
And have very different relations with both of them. But I know that that took a lot of work post-divorce for you, for both. Like, I think divorce does that. I don't think you're special in that sense.
And yeah.
There's a lot of people that have divorced parents and like that kind of shifts their relationship with their parents. How do you think your relationship with them has evolved since that time? And like, what do you think is like the biggest change other than all the obvious changes of like you're older, you know, like you talk about different things. Like, what do you think that point in time changed about your relationship to where it is now?
I don't know. I mean, I think they did a really great job of, like, they have a great relationship between each other.
They do.
Which is admirable and not an option for everybody, but was for them and took a lot of work for them. I don't want to diminish, like, how much work I'm sure it was for them to get to that point. But for us, we never stopped doing, like, family dinner. There was no point that we weren't doing family dinners. So there was like a level of consistency of like, this will always be your family. And I think that almost didn't really change and it still hasn't. I mean, like, you know, we still do, like, we were all just out to dinner for Father's Day. But I would say now that neither Teddy or I are home, we've started to have more independent relationships with each parent and they still talk to each other. Like, I'm planning a wedding. So they,
well, yeah.
They have to be in contact about decisions and stuff. So it's not that they don't talk, but just when we were at home, they obviously there was a lot more for them to talk about a lot. And so I think that they talk to each other less frequently now just because they don't have as much to discuss.
Totally.
And so that's kind of led to an evolution that's happening now of Teddy and I having distinct relationships with each parent versus
the family unit.
Yeah, like the parental units. Because they were always, annoyingly so, a united front as parents. Like, they always discussed everything. So there was no, like, we were not getting away with, you know, calling mom and pinning mom and dad against each other. Like, that was never happening. No one was ever getting away with that in our house. They were always a very, because they had a good relationship, we knew that they would talk to each other. And so there was no getting away with anything behind anybody's back like that.
Yeah. It's a good parenting tactic.
Yeah. So, I would say now is like the first time that we're kind of experiencing this, like, oh, like, dad didn't know that mom was going to a 4th of July party or like, you know, like just like little things like that where it's like, it's just not something that they're like completely aware of every aspect of each other's lives.
Totally. Do you think that, you know, your parents are awesome.
Totally.
Mary and Brian.
They're the best. They're the best parents in the world.
They're the best. And like the relationship they have cultivated, like even from when we were in college, like I remember meeting them and being like, this, what you got with the relationship you have fostered is like one of a kind and so rare. And like, they're friends, like they truly are.
Yeah.
And they, I think to me, like that is the kind of parent that I want to be to my kids.
Yeah.
Like no matter what's happening in your personal life, you are able to be a mom, be a dad. So do you think for you and your fiance, like, have you ever talked about like with your kids, like what are the things that you are taking from both of your parents, the good and the bad, like what are you taking from them? And, you know, how are you going to weave that into your own parenting style, do you think?
I know it is something that we've talked about, but it's difficult. We are both the oldest, mm-hmm. Brian and I. So I think that
her fiance, her father and her fiance have the same name.
It's really sick and twisted. But yeah, so Brian, really so we call my fiance Brian. Thank God I don't call my dad Brian, so there's no issues there. But
totally.
We have talked about it, but we're both the oldest, so there is some kind of shared. It's difficult to piece through what is a parenting thing and what is just like an experience of being the oldest child thing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, we're both very close with our parents, and mm-hmm. I think that that's something that we both
want to take with you.
Yeah. Like want to, you know, Brian might argue I'm a little too close with my parents. I talk to each of them several times a day.
True.
So
you do?
They at least once a day.
Unless we're having a big fat fight.
Even then, we usually speak, you know.
Maybe not as kindly.
Kind of a little with, like, clipped, but we still
with speak. Knives, ice spears.
Yeah, we're, you know, it's a, like, sometimes if my mom and I are arguing, it's like, what? Yes. Okay. Like,
true.
But we're still talking, which, like, why did I call her just to have that tone? I don't know. Why did she call me to have that tone? But we just,
you
we
and
do
mom
talk.
The same person. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. No, any issues she has with me, she needs to take up with the manufacturer. That's just not on me.
I feel like you're going to have a daughter and your daughter is going to be you times 50.
She better not be. That's not going to go well.
No, it's not. But I think she's going to be better at it than you.
Oh, my God.
Which is terrifying to think about.
I know some karma's coming my way.
Oh, it's coming and it's going to be crazy. And I can't wait to watch it. From the side.
I'm going to be like, who is this kid?
And she's going to say to you, take it up with the manufacturer. And you're going to want to kill yourself.
I'm gonna kick her.
CPS is coming for your ass.
Oy, oy, oy.
Kind of, you know, moving on from, you know, your parents and that whole area of life. We went to college together. And speaking of, you know, we've kind of talked about how you had a pretty wonderful upbringing.
Yeah.
Aside from, you know, the divorce of it all. So college was a really tough time for you.
Yeah. I hated college at the beginning. I hated it.
Can you talk a little bit about that? Like,
yeah, I don't think people talk about it enough. I think especially Northwestern starts in like later than mm-hmm. a lot of other schools.
Mm-hmm.
So I also felt like everybody else was settled. Like most people go through kind of homesickness, whatever, like they struggle a little at the beginning of college. But we didn't start class till like
October.
Yeah. So, and if you started school in like August, you were done with the, you know, this part of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that was hard that like my friends from high school were settled by the time that I was kind of going through this stuff. Mm-hmm. And I just felt like very alone in college. Like, I don't think that, like, I didn't have any friends. I didn't feel like I fit in with the other people in my major.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't feel like, so I felt like misunderstood by the theater community.
Mm-hmm.
And, or just like too basic, maybe is like the, like, I feel like I come across as very much like a sorority girl.
Mm-hmm.
And that wasn't really the vibe of the theater world as much.
True.
And
definitely not Northwestern.
No. Like, I felt like everybody else was, like, on our floor, like, in our, you know, in, like, everyone was really nice, but I felt like they were kind of establishing these groups or already had groups established from, like, summer programs that they did.
Yeah.
And it was like, they're all really nice and they're hanging out with you and, like, they're talking to you, but they're not, like, going out of their way to include, like, it's like a weird thing where it's like, yeah, you have people to sit with at the dining hall and you have people to like pass the time,
yeah.
But you don't have people to like be your people that are like bringing you in. And you certainly don't have a group of them. Like, maybe you found a few like here and there.
Yeah.
They don't like know each other and they're not So I feel like that was hard. And then it was really hard on the quarter system, which is ultimately nice. Like, I ended up really enjoying this part of the quarter system because you finish and then you go home for like a month and you have no, like, your breaks are like true breaks. They're between quarters.
Yeah.
But it was hard to go home. Like, I felt like I had been at camp and I was like, oh, that's over. And it was such a difficult thing to be like, I have to go back and I'm going to have to like keep going back. After like reacclimating to home for like a month and a half. We had like,
yeah, we're there for a long
like
time.
Like 6 weeks off.
Well, also, like, how do you think that I think about this a lot. Like, how do you think that that felt to see, especially with social media, like so many of our friends being like, this is the best. I'm having the best time.
I think it's the worst thing in the world to tell people that college is the best time of their life. Like, I really do think that we should stop saying that to kids.
I agree.
Because, like, first of all, it's wrong. Like,
number one,
it's
you're lying.
A lie. It shouldn't be, to
your
be honest.
Your 20s are also not the best decade, by the way.
Like,
I'm
I don't
struggling.
Know what is, but I can tell you that, like, I'm enjoying mentally. This part of my life more than I enjoyed college. And for different reasons, like, I ended, like, this is, I didn't hate college. By sophomore year, I was very happy at college. Mm-hmm. But I do think that it puts so much pressure on people to be like, I'm not, this is supposed to be the best time of my life, and I'm not 100% happy. And that's a disaster. Like, so I need to transfer. This isn't my place, whatever. Like, you send people into a spiral that way, as opposed to just being like, yeah, every part of your life is going to have pros and cons. Like, they all are. Like, college had pros and cons. I was so stressed out about school. And then you graduate, and then I was working at the Lincoln Park Zoo in a minimum wage job and was crying over eggs every day, but also was like, having the best time in Chicago. Like, it's all just a different, you know, like,
there's different gives, there's gives and there's takes for each era of your life.
No part of your life is going to be perfect. Every part of it. And then you look back and you remember it differently. You know, like, I look back and I'm like, oh, that like post-grad life was like the best. Cause I was like, not really expected to be like completely financially on my own. I didn't really have, you know, and, but I was so unbelievably stressed about money the entire time. Mm-hmm. Like, but I look back with the awareness that it obviously all works out.
Yeah.
And think that that time was so fun. But you
same
could have asked
college.
Me that. I would have said it was I was miserable. So I don't think that it's good to, like, I think that we look back with the hindsight that everything works out in college and tell people that it's the best time of your life. But I don't know that that's
healthy.
No.
Or true.
No.
Well, it's not true. We did call everybody who said that a big fat liar. And you are a big fat liar.
Yeah, like, it's just, and it's, maybe it was true for you, but it's certainly not true for everyone. Like,
I think some kids are more adept to that kind of change.
Yeah.
I think I know we are very similar in this way, that a lot of change really fast, not good. We freak out, we panic.
I felt very out of control. Like, it. Yeah. I just felt so trapped. Like,
oh my God.
I think it was
wait,
very.
We have to tell them the airplane story.
Oh my God. That is so like, that's like literal lunacy, Kate. Go ahead.
Just speaking of trapped, Grace and I, all things Grace is saying is something I also felt at Northwestern in my first.
That's how Kate and I like became friends.
That is how we became friends.
Our mutual misery.
Our first year at Northwestern, I would say, was like pretty horrible. And then our second year got better. And then I would say our junior year was the best, because I think that's when we became the closest.
Oh, I feel like senior year was the best.
No, yes. But I mean, like, junior year was like when we really like when it started getting really good.
Yeah.
I feel like.
Yeah.
Sophomore year was great.
But I still had difficulty even sophomore year. Like, I remember when my mom moved me into my sorority house being like, you're just leaving? Like, having this, like,
meltdown.
Yeah, like, it wasn't a meltdown. And, like, once she had been gone for 10 minutes, I felt fine. But you still have that, like, oh, my God, she's just going to, like, leave me here. Like, yeah. I'm just going to, like,
just going to be here.
Oh, yeah. But then the time that it takes you to adjust to being there gets shorter and shorter. But I feel like by junior year was the time that I wasn't, like, really having, like, gut-wrenching goodbyes anymore.
To tell the story about the airplanes, because you said the word trapped. And we did feel very trapped, I think. The first welcome. So welcome week at Northwestern, as I'm sure it is for every other university, there's like a bunch of activities that are going on, like, at all hours of the day. It's like they keep you really busy. And Grace and I wanted nothing more than just be alone with each other in our rooms crying.
Yeah.
Because everybody else was so excited with this newfound freedom. And I don't know if it was just the way we were raised, where we we're really lucky that we had parents and the ability and the privilege to be free in the places that we were and to drink and to like hang out with our friends. Like maybe we had that freedom already. And so this was the first time a lot of people were experiencing that kind of freedom. We just didn't want it in the same way they did. And so we would leave every event the minute we could. And while we were walking back to our dorm one night, when everyone was like out at a party, Grace and I are like crying on the lake fill at Northwestern University. And we're hearing planes over. This is such a pathetic story. Looking at planes flying
over us. It's legitimately embarrassing, actually.
It's flying over us. And we would cry and be like, do you think they're going to New York?
We'd be like, I wish I was on a plane.
I wish I was on that plane.
Out of here.
Anywhere but here. I will go anywhere but here. Like, we would do that. Like, that. There wasn't only the only time. Like, that happened a lot.
No. And I remember feeling that way. Like, I remember genuinely looking up at the planes and being like, so fucking jealous. Like, yeah. Not even in a drama way, just in a like, I hate it here. Like when you're just so, when you get in that headspace, and I really do think that it was a feeling of being trapped. Like I just was like, you don't have the autonomy
to leave.
To leave. Like,
yeah. Where are you?
You
going?
Don't have any money. Like I couldn't like just like, where was I going? Like what, you know? Yeah.
Without Mary's okay. And Mary certainly would have not let you go.
No, both my parents would have been like, no, you're staying at school. I did try to leave school and go work at Disney World. And they both were like, you may not do that. Like that, that is
honestly
not a reasonable life choice.
That still would have been, you still would have been, maybe you would have been less miserable, but I think not being with near your parents was really hard.
I think I would have liked Disney. I maybe would have been happier, but short term.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't, like, I never would have wanted to go back to school, which was, you know.
The point. What do you think that you would say, for kids that are going to college?
Yeah.
What is the thing that you would say to them? Like, would you say, like, it's
there's
not
no
the
way out but through. Like, you just got to get through that. And it's so shitty. And, like, people should talk about it more, that it's, like, really shitty. And if you don't go through it, that, like, great. Like, that, you know, great. Like, that's just my experience with it, is that I was so miserable and I didn't feel like anybody was talking about it, that it was so hard.
You just feel crazy.
Yeah. Well, I started to think that I was like, am I like too immature to be here? Like, why am I struggling so much?
Yeah.
No, that's not what it is. You're just adjusting.
Totally.
And other people should talk about that adjustment. Even like, and it's all was all hard. Like all of a sudden you go from your usual life to, I mean, our dorm was gross.
Yeah, that was gross.
And then you're, you know, in these like public bathroom stall things and there's mold in the shower and you're like dragging your shower caddy around with you. Like all of that is an adjustment that you're just not used to, and you get used to it. It all becomes fine. But
yeah.
Like I remember trying to like shave in that shower and being like, you can't even like touch the walls because there's mold growing everywhere. Like stuff like just stuff like that. That's like, you know, and when you're already in a bad headspace, you're like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, and I can't even, I have to like contort my body to try to shave my shin. Like, are you crazy?
That was terrible.
So
you just unlocked a memory for me in my brain.
Yeah. And I think people forget that. Like, you forget those little shitty things that are just shitty about your day. And you don't know like what classes are going to be like. You have no idea how hard it's going
to be. You don't know where anything is. Like, it's a, you're navigating a campus. For a lot of people, you're navigating a new city. You're navigating a completely new, we both came from the East Coast. Midwest was a completely, for me, it was a culture shock just in how nice everything
was. I remember
was.
Landing and being like, it's so flat.
Yeah, like it's just like a weird, you're just adjusting to a lot. The sights, the sounds, your allergies, the where you are, what you're learning, what's expected of you in college. Like it's a lot more work. Like you have to really budget out your time. There was a lot of things that I think there's a big adjustment period. And I think no one talks about it. And it makes me really sad because I think I feel bad for kids like us who like really struggled that first quarter, first semester.
Mm-hmm.
And if I had heard somebody talk about it, I would have been like, oh, so I'm not crazy. Okay, it gets better. It gets better. And I think even that is helpful. If I had known that, I think that if someone had said that to me, I think I would have, my period of suffering would have been maybe shorter.
Well, you just would judge yourself less for the period of suffering because you're like, okay, it's going to get better. It's going to get better.
Yeah. That time of life was crazy, but it gave me you. So
hell yeah.
Feeling very grateful for Northwestern, even as there were moments that were tough. Kind of all in this and moving, you know, getting a show on the Yes Network. Let's talk a little bit about Nepo Babies. And
the nepotism of
it all. Because this is like a very taboo subject and something I've wanted to talk about, and I've been waiting to talk about it for you because you and I talk about it a lot. You know, everyone on the internet was to call you the biggest nepo baby of them all.
I know. It's the laziest insult, to be honest.
I mean,
every time someone comments like nepo baby, I'm like, oh, Sherlock Holmes is here. Like,
like, yeah. Yeah.
Like, oh, thank God. Like, they always comment it. What gets me is people comment it as if it is something that I've hidden from everyone and then pretending that I'm not and like defensive of and that they've like caught me in something.
Yeah, caught you red-handed.
No, like, and I mean, I think that we'd all be lying if we said that there's a reason the Yes Network like had my phone number. Like, you know, they weren't calling other random 25-year-old women, as far as I know. Yeah, I mean, like, we can talk about like the story of the show and how like I got involved, but it just
I feel like you've talked about that openly.
Yeah.
Already.
I had worked with somebody else on a different show that was not part of the Yes Network. And the show that I'm currently hosting was originally hoping that a former player would host. And that was just like becoming too difficult to work out scheduling wise. But their hope for a former player was that it would be someone that was around the game enough and that had some kind of level of trust and familiarity with the players already. Mm-hmm. And then they were interviewing other people and they had kind of one but not both of those things. And then my name came up and they said, oh, this might work. You know, like these are people that she knows or people that, you know,
she grew up around
that at least are familiar with her. And there'll be some level of trust in that. Brian Cashman's daughter isn't going to try to make a current Yankee player look bad.
Of course.
Like, I'm not going to try to like do a gotcha. The show's supposed to be fun. Yeah.
And it is.
Yeah. So like it. But yeah, there's no pretending that that wasn't part of it, you know?
Totally. Well, I think it's used today as a very harsh insult. It's like you said, it's meant to be like the biggest insult of all time. But a lot of these, you know, a lot of nepo babies that I have met, most of the ones I know are pretty honest about it and are like, I mean, yeah, like the reason why my name came up was
of
because
course.
Of this. But like, I, you know, who am I to say no to that opportunity when it is something I want to do?
Someone asked me on another podcast about like defending myself in that and, you know, how you convince people that you're not in the room because of your last name. And I was like, well, I think a lot of it is that you are in the room because of your last name some of the time. And you'd be foolish to not take the opportunity for the things that you want. Mm. Because of your last name. Like, you can't let it work against you either, you know?
Totally.
If you are afforded certain privileges, I think you should take them.
But be, like,
respectful. But gracious. Yeah.
Gracious.
I mean, I think that's something that I learned early on was maybe your name or connections or whatever can get you in the room, but it's not going to keep you in the room.
Yeah.
And maybe they'll do... Sometimes they're doing you a favor, just they're like, oh, we'll take 5 minutes just to watch her. But like, they don't really have any intention of giving you anything. Mm. And so you have to prove yourself once you're in the room. So I think a lot of it is also if you're getting an opportunity as a favor, you better be the hardest working person that's in the room. You know, I don't know. I think that it's a weird conversation that people have where it's like people act like it's a huge burden. And it's not a burden. Like, it's never going to be a burden coming from privilege and access. But it also isn't like a get out of jail free card in the way that people act like it is. Like, it's just a pass, go, collect $200. Like, it isn't that either.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you grew up rich, like, that's in, you know, a way being a nepo baby. Like, even if you're in a completely separate industry than your family. And I would say that that's where it really came to play in my career is that I had access to training. Like, my voice lessons, my education were not a financial burden on my family. I wasn't expected to be contributing financially to my family. So my free time was my free time to do musical theater, to take voice lessons, to get in a dance class. And that wasn't something that I needed to be in a job to be contributing financially to the family in some way. And then I was allowed to pursue and encouraged by my family to pursue what I wanted and not something that was going to be lucrative immediately. Like, all of those things are like, I would say that's where I see the nepotism the most, is that I wasn't fighting an uphill battle with finances and trying to make enough to contribute to my family. I wasn't trying to pay for voice lessons by myself. So I think that that's where I see it the most.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's, and obviously, like, I'm not, you know, connections and all of that are valuable, but I think it's something that we point at mostly women mm-hmm. I think, and say about women in entertainment more than we say about men in finance. And I think it's kind of the exact same thing.
Yeah.
And I also think it's interesting on the topic of it being a women's thing is there's a lot of MLB players that whose parents play or fathers played in the MLB.
Really?
A lot.
I didn't know that.
And that's true for like a lot of athletes, like football, whatever.
Well, the most famous one is LeBron James and his son are playing on the same team right now.
Yep.
But that's like the only time that I've ever like I saw that and I thought that was like an outlier.
Well, I think what's interesting about that is that they are
on the same team.
Yeah. Like that they're both right. still doing it. But it is. I mean, it's not unheard of. And I don't see people pointing and calling them Nepo in the same way mm-hmm. because there seems to be this like, oh, that totally makes sense. They got a gene from their, you know, some of its genetics. Mm-hmm. And then they had resources and access, you know, all of the stuff. And so that totally makes sense.
And they're like, okay with that.
Yeah. But there seems to be, I mean, I'm sure, and I'm not saying that these people don't like take it. I'm sure there are like to some degree they do, but I don't see it in the mainstream media in the same way that I see it with women in entertainment.
Yeah.
And I think that that is
a problem,
especially because I think it's mostly men that are pointing at women in entertainment and saying it.
Most of your hate comments are men.
Totally.
I think also something you said, just like I was thinking, oh, I think like also like it's something that happens purely in entertainment. It's where people point the nepotism finger the most. Mm-hmm. Like you said, like it's not even just the men in entertainment. It's not, it's mostly for women in entertainment, but like it, the men in entertainment get it too. Mm-hmm. Like Ben Platt gets it pretty aggressively mm-hmm. in the theater community. And a lot of, you know, a lot of people like, Kaia Gerber gets it a lot, and so does Dakota Johnson and Gwyneth Paltrow. Like, all of these people in the entertainment space get it really crazily. When what you just said about them being those sports people, the genes, the access to the resources, the network,
it's all
the same thing.
Yeah.
And so it's like, well, then it should make sense that, you know, Dakota Johnson is an incredible actor because who are her parents? Like, think about the, there's part of that that might be genetic too. And also she had access to the resources and the connections and the, she was around it. There was a sense of literacy that she just grew up with that most people have to learn.
And I think that it's worth acknowledging, mm-hmm. you know, like it's not something that I'm saying, like we should just stop saying it. Cause like, I think that, you know, it's worth acknowledging, like I had to work a little less hard. Like I had to fight, like I didn't have to knock on every agent's door. Like,
yeah,
this isn't me. This is
Dakota
Jolly or whoever, you know, like, but, you know, to some extent me in a different way, but new people. And you didn't have to go through
as many.
I'll use Teddy for an example. Teddy plays D1 baseball. Teddy has the ability to run things by my dad,
who's an abundance of resource.
He's not. Yeah. So Teddy's not messing around with a hitting coach that isn't the best of the best. You know, like there's all like you're going straight to the
top number one.
Yeah. You're going like
you're cutting off like you're able to take a shortcut.
Yeah, exactly.
And that
is not saying that you're not doing the training. It's like you're doing the training, but you're just kind of going like you're not wasting time with anybody who's going to teach you vocal. You're not wasting time with any quacks. You're not going through the same learning curve that other people have to go through when they're entering a business. You're going in with protection already mm-hmm. and knowledge and education and awareness. And that is an enormous privilege.
Totally.
And access to that because people want to work with you. They, you know, they want to do a favor for your family, whatever it is.
Yeah.
So I think that that is worth acknowledging as a Nepo baby. Like, you know, that you have that.
You're able to skip steps. Like you were able to do that.
Totally.
And it is unfair. Like I would
think
argue
we
that
as
it isn't.
Society also need to stop pointing it. There's a weird thing that happens. This is my personal take, and I'm like kind of speaking off the cuff. There's a weird thing that happens where the world points and says Nepo baby, and kind of what the world is saying, like the subtext is doesn't work, doesn't deserve it, didn't work to be here kind of thing. And I think that is what the Nepo baby hears. And then they feel the need to defend it in a like, no, I work really hard. I do this, that, and the other. And then it becomes this like really just like no one's speaking the same language at that point because it isn't really that anybody's saying that you didn't do any work or that you don't deserve it. It's kind of, I think the what we all need to get better at is saying people just want it to be acknowledged that
you had a leg up.
Yeah, you had a leg up. Exactly.
Like have grace about that.
100%. So I think everyone needs to be better about that. Like
Nepo babies included.
Yeah. Nepo babies need to be better about saying totally had a leg up and not getting quite so defensive when they're called out about being an Epo baby,
it doesn't
myself included.
Like, it doesn't mean you're untalented. It doesn't mean you're not good at this. It doesn't mean any of those things. It's just what that is. You are projecting your fear of what you fear people are thinking about you.
Yeah.
And when you get defensive, maybe they will start to think that about you because you're acting so defensive. Like,
yeah.
Nobody really acts that defensive unless you have something to hide.
And at the end of the day, there's nothing like you. Someone that wants to hate on you is going to find a reason to hate on you. There's nothing you can do to convince everybody that you are hardworking or deserving or any of those things. Like, somebody that has already decided that you're not those things, is not convincible that you are those things. Totally. Especially if they're a stranger. Like, you know, maybe someone like you could convince on the other side of the table, but not someone that's, you know, an anonymous handle on the internet. So
thank you for saying all of that and being so open and honest about it. Because I think that at least I feel a lot of fear talking about it because I, full transparency, like, do come from an immense amount of privilege.
Yeah.
And I've never talked about that publicly. And I feel like you have had no choice but to talk about it publicly because of your job and like the nature of what you do. And I think what you're saying is so true. Like, it's just what people really want is a level playing field. But they're never going to get that, unfortunately. That's just like not the way the world works. Nepotism is in every single corner of every single industry, no matter how you spin it. But for the people who have a leg up, it is your job to...
I do think you have a responsibility to be honest about it.
To be honest and to be gracious and to be like, I do work really hard and I am really good at my job, but I did have access to some of the best training in the world. I did have access to insert name of casting director here on a personal level. Like, I did have a leg up. And that is unfair. But, you know, there's nothing there's nothing to be done about that other than me acknowledging it and acknowledging that other people work way harder to get to where I am. And they deserve to be here just as much as I do.
Yeah. And everybody's path is different. Like, you know, everybody faces different struggles in their career.
Totally.
So having a leg up is huge. But it also, you know, other people have... Some people have legs like a leg up in this part of it. Other people have a leg up here. Some people don't have a leg up at all. And none of it's fair, but it just is the reality of the world that, you know.
I want to talk a little bit about Brian, your fiance.
Yes.
How long have you guys been together officially? Like, what do you call it?
So when people ask that, we usually just say we met in high school.
Yeah.
Because we did.
True. Doing musical theater, might I add. Hell, a showman's that made it all the way to the bling ring.
So we normally just say we met in high school because we did meet in high school. We dated in high school and then a little through college. We broke up and we're broken up for
2 years.
2 years, a little over 2 years. And then got back together as adults. So,
yeah, when you were living in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
So something I feel like a lot of people who go to college are always told is like, don't go to college with your high school boyfriend. Like, don't do that. So did people tell you that when you were going to college?
Yeah, they all did.
And did you like ever, like at that point in time, were you sure that you were going to marry Brian?
No. But I was, well, I mean, I don't know. You'd have to ask her. She was nuts. I'm glad I don't have to talk to her anymore. But I do remember, and I think that this was the right choice, was feeling very confident that the relationship had not run its course and that it was going to end in some kind of crazy heartbreak that I couldn't even fathom, like that amount of pain from at the time. And it seemed like unnecessary. Like, I was like, why would we do that if we are both not wanting that? You know, it's one thing if you're unsure or whatever, but I remember thinking maybe this crashes and burns, but then at least we'll know.
True.
But I thought that I would look back and have question marks and regrets about, because he was my first love, you know, like, so you're in those like huge big love feelings that you're like, no one's ever loved like this before.
Surely no.
You're having those feelings, like, you know, so I just remember feeling sure that breaking up for no reason was going to result in some kind of crazy mind fuck of like, whoa, was that a mistake? Like, I was never going to feel sure about breaking up.
Mm-hmm.
So we did not.
You did not. You did later. Something I've always been curious about of... with long-term relationships. I'm in my like first long-term relationship. I'm almost at 2 years. And something that I think I didn't realize is like the ebbs and flows of desire and also like emotional closeness and that kind of stuff like is normal. But mm-hmm. it's something I'd never experienced and really like freaked me out. The first time I think I like called you panicked about it. I'm sure I did. But like, how do you navigate those times where like maybe those month long stretches or weeks long stretches where you're feeling like, I know I love you. I know I want to be you and I want to be with you and I want to continue to be with you, but I'm feeling like a lack of connection and I think I need to like be alone for a second.
Well, after 10 years, it becomes quite easy to say that.
Well, yes.
Like you start to just be very comfortable saying like very bluntly. Like sometimes Ryan will be like, do you want to cuddle? And I'm like, no, thank you. And that's, you know, and he's like, okay. Like there's no, there's no weirdness about it. It's just a like, actually, I don't want to be touched even a little right now. And yeah. then there's no offense.
And maybe I won't ever again. Who knows?
Yeah. I'll think about it. Your request is processing. That becomes easier. You get better at reading each other also. So I feel like it becomes easier for me to not feel rejected because I'm not advancing in a way that he's going to reject and vice versa, the same. But I also think that this is a crazy thing to say as a Disney adult, but it is a little that we see this like soulmate mentality where it's like, oh, they met and then they lived happily ever after. And I think it's a better mentality to look at it like a choice, like I'm choosing you and I choose you always. So it's not always easy. It's not always like, oh, we're just in love. But I think that there's a little bit of a notion these days or just generally that it's like, oh, when things get hard or uncomfortable, people are like, oh, well, then maybe you're just not my person. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's right. It's just a like, no, maybe you're just like having a bad day
or a bad week.
I was so stressed out this morning. And then Brian came in while I was in a work meeting and like started rummaging around in the ice. And I was like, oh, he's dead. Like he's making so much noise. I'm going to kill him. And then I was really stressed out and like overstimulated. And he came in and started chewing lunch.
Oh, God.
In the kitchen, like where one eats. But yet I was like, this is it.
we're breaking off the engagement.
No, I was like, I'm going to throw him out the window like that. he's about to die. But here we are. This is where things get better. He looked up at me while he was chewing and was like, sorry, because he could see that I was like throwing daggers with my sensory overload of his chewing sounds. So
totally.
You get better at it. Like
at navigating. And for yourself, like, how do you calm? Like you and I are very panicked humans.
Totally.
They manifest very differently. I would say I'm panicky in like a slow brewing storm way.
No, I'm panicky in a complete emotional outburst.
Yeah, like Grace is like a, yeah, way. Grace is like a tornado type of panic. It's there and then it's gone just as quick.
Oh, yeah. I rage text people in invisible ink. That's
kind of
how
mechanism.
I blow off steam.
Well, it's also recognizing, I think, in a long-term relationship, and we talked about this at dinner the other day, like your relationship isn't meant to be your everything. Like you shouldn't go to your partner for everything.
Yeah.
Everything. Like you need to have other people where you get other things from them, whatever it may be. And you had told me that you and Brian were having a discussion and you were venting to him and he was like, trying to give you real advice and you were like,
no, he was giving me feedback about how I handled the situation, which was accurate feedback, but I in the moment was still too stressed and hurt about the situation that didn't involve him. Like he was just happened to be a witness to this situation.
Right.
And I was too stressed and overstimulated and hurt by the situation that I wasn't ready or willing to hear feedback at that time. Even though I know his feedback was right, but I was getting frustrated because I was trying to communicate that like that's what I need in this moment is just validation that what happened to me was wrong. Mm-hmm. And then we can, you know, once I've calmed down from that, we can go into a like, and then you reacted wrong.
Yeah, but not right now.
But we're not there yet. That's step two. And he wasn't really quite getting that. And that was really frustrating to me, but
and
we got there.
He said to you, he was like, well, I'm not.
He was like, I'm not that person in your life. Like that you have other people in your life that do that for you. And I was like, okay, but in this moment, it's like 2 o'clock in the morning and I'm pissed.
And you
so not waking to. Somebody up to do it. So, and since all you have to say is, yes, you're right, could you just do that?
And then he did. Thank God. So
eventually.
Kind of going. Oh my God, Brian. I pray for your sanity every day.
Yeah, you sound like my dad. Every time I tell him one of these stories, he goes, oh, poor bastard.
I mean, you are a joy.
I know.
And a privilege to know.
Brian Cashman, take it up with the manufacturer.
Yeah, seriously.
Someone created the monster.
And I wonder.
It was you and Mary.
I think, like, you know, you're a privilege and a joy to
Thanks.
Be near at all times. I just, it's funny to me, like, the way, like, you and Brian are so meant for each other, because Brian is truly the only person in the world.
Oh, it's so yin and yang.
So well.
It's so yin and yang.
Totally. Like,
Brian. We were out to dinner with my mom the other night, and I was like, oh, I got my nails done today. And he was like, oh, beautiful. And my mom was like, what the fuck? But, like, it's
so
just,
him.
Like, so, like, perfect. I'm so glad you showed me. Beautiful. And I was like, see, perfect. That's all I needed. I just needed someone to say good job.
Yeah, and it's honestly, with boys, like, you train them. You train them to be.
I just want to be the most feared witch in the land and then get a kiss on the head.
Right.
Is that so much to ask?
No, actually, I think that's normal. Kind of closing this one out. First of all, thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
It just feels like we've been yapping for an hour.
We totally have.
I hope you all enjoyed our conversation, our hour long where we yap. My kind of final question is, again, going back to what I was saying about how you just protect your peace so ferociously.
Wait, thanks.
You do. You really do. And ever since college, again, you did it. Like, we were all going out, and again, it was about, like you said, it's setting expectations really early. I, like, stopped doing this once I figured this out about you. But if we would all be, like, going out and it was 8 p.m.
No.
Just wasn't happening.
No.
But you were really good at never, you know, bending to maybe you wanted to go because you wanted people to like you never, like, it was like, no, this, I need to be in bed by 9 p.m. I need to be having my skincare on. I need to talk to my boyfriend. I need to go to sleep. Like, that's just what I need. What do you
think? If I've already washed my face, there's no. There's
I mean, well, yes.
From that.
But that, yeah, no, you're, that's when you understand Grace's skin routine and personal hygiene routine. There's you understand.
It's strict and unwavering.
It's strict and unwavering. It actually hasn't changed since.
It changes for no one.
Nope. Not anyone. Not her own children, probably.
No.
Especially probably. So in that, what would you say is your best piece of advice to people who are trying to get better at protecting their peace and trying to get better at setting those boundaries?
Well, I think I'm good at it because my inner peace is lacking. Like, I think when people say protecting your peace, there's an implied peace that is there. And I feel like that's something that I struggle with. So that's something that I need, like, to remove outside influence to work on. But I think that you can set boundaries for your, like, for me, it was washing my, like, I knew that if I had already washed my face and done my skincare, if I ate dinner at 5 o'clock at night and then did all of that at six, I was not going to go. No matter how much I wanted to go, there was no getting me to go. Mm-hmm. So I think if you can figure out whatever it is to make it so that you know that you'll be like, oh, I really just can't go, like, whatever, you know, do whatever it is. Like, for that was the boundary for me, is that I was like, that's a line I won't cross. Like, if I've already done my skincare, I'm not going anywhere. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of how I policed myself about it. So you can find ways to do that.
Set yourself up for success.
Exactly. Set yourself up for success and then figure out exactly what you need so that you're not doing more than you need to do, you know, because I think sometimes people try, you know, they throw spaghetti at the wall and they're like, I'm going to wake up at 5 a.m. and I'm going to journal and then I'm going to work out and then I'm going to have my green juice and then I'm going to go to Pilates. And then after I've done my two workouts and my journaling and my manifestations and my meditations and my affirmations and all of that, then I'm going to go to my 9 to 5. And it's like, you're just not going to do all of that all at once, you know? So you have to figure out, like, add one of those things into your routine. And if it works, add another, or replace it if it's not working. But you have to be able to say that that's not working for me. You know, sometimes waking up early does not work for me.
Does not provide you inner peace.
Nope, it does not. So I don't do it. But you have to be able, you know, then things come and trend on TikTok. And I was thinking about doing it again because everyone was like, oh my God, the Mel Robbins, it all works. Like, you just wake it, whatever. And I was like, I already know that doesn't work for me. I can't be influenced by other people to tell me that it works for me. It doesn't work for me, but it does. It is very tempting when, you know,
so many people are saying it does.
Yeah. I'm not good at Pilates. I don't like Pilates. It's not my thing.
versus I love it and I try
so
to
so trendy right now and I'm always like it's just not, it's not I'm thing. Not a Pilates girl like it's just not for
you're
me.
A running girl that's just what it is for you
I freaking hate running but it is what I in fact do
I hate running as well that's good advice
yeah but just figure like, out what works for you and then place. Like
doing that
yeah no like trust yourself it's almost like when people say like when someone shows you who they are believe them it's like when you have learned something about yourself like learn it and then put it away you know
no totally well thank you so much for being here
thanks for having me please
love you should we go get a glass of wine
maybe why not
thank you guys see you next time.